There it is. Base hit left field. Here comes Heap around second. There will be no throw to the plate. And Strawberry has his first major league base hit.
He'll always remember this one.
Warming up their third pitcher. Well hit to left center field. Out of here. Darryl Strawberry's first major league home run.
All
Strawberry
right.
goes to the opposite power alley.
Strawberry is up facing Nepper. It is now a 4-1 ball game. Strawberry hits it high in the air to right. Fast to the wall. It's gone. The score is tied.
High drive into deep right field. Evans back at the wall. Gone.
There goes Strawberry. Breaking ball is high. The throw, not in time, and he's done it.
Darryl Strawberry, a member of the 30-30 Club.
Bottom of the fifth inning.
Speaking of home runs, there's a long drive. That ball is out of here. Home run, Darryl Strawberry.
I can't believe it. That ball hit the top of the stadium.
One to tie here in the bottom of the 10th inning. And a drive to deep right field. It's going, going, and it's gone. Goodbye. And the Mets win it on Strawberry's two-run home run in the 10th inning.
He might be the best hitter in the National League right now, maybe in baseball.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, June the 2nd, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X, Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and of course, you can get the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. We spend today recapping the weekend, putting a little bow on the Darryl Strawberry weekend ceremony. We're going to talk about Darryl, look at Darryl's career. I had a piece free for everybody. Hope you had a chance to enjoy it, even if you're not a Substack paid subscriber. A little gift to the fans this weekend in honor of Darryl Strawberry, and then a little special if you want to subscribe for a year. So hopefully you take advantage of that. But, you know, we'll talk a little bit and look at Strawberry's career in retrospective, you know, in the most balanced way possible that we do. I thought Darryl had a tremendous speech. Tremendous speech, very profound, great message and great challenge to the current Mets and future Mets to hit their stride, to maximize their abilities, and we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about kind of where this team is at, which is not a great place, and an approach post-Jorge Lopez and media meltdown earlier in the week that they're taking, which, you know, maybe the best case scenario for this current club, but obviously not a process that I believe will, you know, get this team to where they need to go. So anyway, let's start with Darryl Strawberry. And I know there's been some debate, and I've seen some people talk about, you know, the Mets over-retiring of numbers. And I don't agree with that. You know, maybe I could debate the Willie Mays situation a little bit. Hey, it was a promise by Mrs. Payson, so be it. And maybe you could debate the Jerry Kuzman one a little bit. And, you know, outside of taking their off-the-field issues into play, you know, Doc and Darryl were elite, top 10, top 5 players in baseball in their prime when they were members of the New York Mets. You know, Doc declined at the end as a member of the Mets. Darryl declined as a member of the Los Angeles Dodgers to the day, to the last swing he took as a New York Met. He was a top 10 player in baseball. And I wrote about that over at Beyond the Mic, substack.com/talkingmetsnoG. And ironically, it was amazing. You know, this was something I didn't know, that in Mets history, you all know has been built on pitching. Seaver, Kuzman, Matlock, Ryan, Gentry, and then Gooden, Darling, Fernandez, Aguilera, Cone, so on and so forth. And then, of course, Harvey, Wheeler, Syndergaard, Mats, DeGrom, maybe the best of all other than Seaver. But very rarely, you know, and Strawberry really in Mets history was the first elite offensive player drafted and developed. Very rarely have they been built on offense. I mean, you could bring Piazza into play, who was acquired and was the heart and soul and leader of that, you know, Mets team that went to the postseason, back-to-back seasons, and nearly won the World Series. And of course, you have David Wright, who during his, you know, career was a top 10 player in baseball, but conglomerate on, you know, when you factor in war on both sides of the ball, not as an offensive player. With Strawberry, when you look at him on both as a run creator and as a, in totality, player value, he was a top 10 player in baseball. And the Mets have not seen somebody like that don their uniform since Darryl. I think Wright came the closest, and sure, Piazza was imported, and his impact was every bit of a Strawberry being drafted. But the Mets last drafted that kind of offensive player, that kind of talent, you know, a guy that would be, you know, like what the Yankees have with Judge and Soto, over 40 years ago, almost 50 years ago. So it's been a long time since this town has seen someone like Darryl Strawberry. And I think what's important is, you know, looking back yesterday, I mean, how many players would not only put together such an erudite speech, but apologize to the fans and really come arms open and saying, I'm sorry about leaving. When, if you listen to him with John Heyman and Joel Sherman on their podcast, the Mets airmailed Strawberry to the West Coast by offering him a 2-year deal. Frank Cashin hated free agency. The Mets didn't want to be in free agency. They never were in free agency during the 80s. And part of that was collusion. Collusion 1, collusion 2, collusion 3, Bud Selig, and Fred Wilpon, who was a big supporter of what Selig and Jerry Reinsdorf and those guys were doing. And maybe that was part of it, but there was guys like Jack Morris and Tim Raines and so on and so forth that easily could have been members of the New York Mets, Andre Dawson, if they just wrote a check. They just wrote a check, and they could have kept all their young talent, and, you know, so be it at that point. So when Strawberry became a free agent, Cashin and Darryl showed a lot of grace by, you know, giving Cashin the proper credit, not showing any bitterness. And I spoke to Frank Cashin when he was elected, you know, God rest his soul, when he was elected to the Mets Hall of Fame in 2010. And he said, look, Darryl's agent wanted him to be in L.A. He wanted him to get involved in movies. You find out now that Darryl's agent was, you know, this was a big payday for him. And, you know, L.A. was home, and playing with his buddy Eric Davis was enticing. And, you know, when Darryl came on my 1240 AM WGBB show, this is early after he retired in 2007. So he was just beginning the process of healing and bringing his ministry into the forefront and really evolving as an individual and a human being. You know, he didn't have very nice things to say. He didn't go out and bash Tommy Lasorda, but he didn't have great things to say about Tommy Lasorda. He had great things to say about Joe Torre. He had great things to say about the Yankees organization. He had great things to say about David Johnson and the Mets, but not Tommy Lasorda and the Dodgers, which, as his hometown team, was a dark period in his baseball career. So, you know, Darryl coming back, apologizing to the fans, and then we'll get into the back half of the show, basically challenging the current group to start to embrace what being in New York, what being an athlete in New York is all about, to me is unprecedented and was needed. Was needed. Because on the same day that Darryl says to these guys, hey, these are fans that are going to tell you when you blank. These are fans that are going to clap and cheer and love you. Embrace it. It goes too fast. And that's for both sides. That's for both sides. Because often we don't take a step back and appreciate the good times when we're in the good times. I can tell you, and I was very young, the good times for the Mets, I didn't appreciate them. Because as a young kid at 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, and the Mets lose to the Dodgers in the postseason, in your mind, you're like, oh, they'll be back next year. And then they lose in 89. They'll be back next year. In 1990, oh, don't worry, there's another year. And there isn't. And I think the players sometimes, when they're in the moment and they have the opportunity, when all the other garbage is swirling, the contract negotiations, the fights with Keith Hernandez, the fights with the media, the anger towards Davey Johnson, or, you know, hating the fans because they're booing you. You know, I think there was a period when, in August of 86, he went 0 for Shea Stadium. And he got booed. Darryl got booed plenty. Not just by the opposition, by his own fans. And talk radio was founded in 1987 at WFAN, and Darryl Strawberry was a big part of the calls that came in. He was the A-Rod. He was the lightning rod. He was the guy that, you know, everybody wanted to talk about. You may have loved him, you may have hated him, but he got you a reaction. Not so much Doc and the rest of the club. It was Darryl. And I wrote about this part. When you really start to take a step back and look at the 80s Mets and put aside the drugs and the partying and Mike Socia and Terry Pendleton and all that stuff, you start to look at the eras of Frank Cashin. And really, and Darling brought it up on the broadcast yesterday, the McReynolds trade. And I defended it back when I remember being a kid, McReynolds. McReynolds had a really good 88. He was a good outfielder. He was a solid player, but he wasn't elite. And when you start to look at the numbers that a Kevin Mitchell put up after he left New York, almost immediately when he got to play every day for the Padres, and the Padres wound up sending him to San Francisco pretty quickly. So a lot of other teams had issues with Mitchell being a little wild and his off-the-field ties to some seedy characters. But here's a guy that would win the MVP in 1989 and hit over 40 home runs. Could you imagine a lineup, you know, between those years? And if Darryl resigned and maybe they got a couple more years out of him before some of his off, and who knows what would have happened off the field. A lineup of Hojo and Mitchell and Darryl and Jeffries. I mean, this is post-Carter being in there, post-Knight, post-Hernandez. I mean, there's even another name that the Mets traded, and he traded him for Mackie Sass, or Randy Milligan, a first baseman. You know, with the decline of Keith, Magadan wound up getting the job. Actually, they did everything they could to not give it to Magadan. They even brought in Mike Marshall. But, you know, the Mets had a lot of talent that they let go. You know, on the offensive side, they really post-Hernandez and Carter being elite. And you squeezed whatever juice out of those guys was left, which wasn't much. After 86, Hernandez and Carter started the steep decline. Carter more so than Hernandez. In 89, it was gone. I mean, they were awful in 89. And you were left with the Sassers and the Lions and the Magadans, who were good component players, but were not elite. They were not like Kevin Mitchell. And look, you want to criticize the Lenny Dykstra trade for Juan Samuel? Put Lenny in that? You could even swallow that if Mitchell's still in the lineup. But could you imagine? And Lenny did, and this is where it's revisionist history. Lenny did everything in his power to push his way out by fighting with Davey Johnson. But Dykstra and his elite run creation in center, and Mitchell in left, and Darryl in right, and Jeffries in there. And, you know, maybe you keep Magadan, maybe it's a Randy Milligan, maybe it's somebody like that. And Hojo, and in an analytics era, Hojo could even be considered a leadoff hitter with his power, and he did do that. So when you start to really think about Strawberry and Strawberry's tenure with the Mets, and if you say, oh, it was disappointing and he didn't do enough, he was elite. His career took a dive after New York. Unlike Doc, whose career started to take a dive while he was with the Mets, and that was injuries. And yes, the partying and the drinking make you, what if? What if? Would 89 have been better? Because 89 wasn't great. That was when the contract, you know, I think he had gone into Smithers for alcohol abuse after 88 or whatever it may be. So 89 was a rough year for Darryl. But even so, he was pretty good. You know, you look at that 87-88 Strawberry, that is an elite top three, top five player in baseball. The only knock you could give about Darryl during his tenure was maybe a little bit with his glove, his focus in the outfield. He had a great arm. He had a gait that could, you know, play defense with the best of them. He was not a bad outfielder by any stretch. I know advanced analytics and UZR is not kind to him, or value is not kind to him. It's hard to really judge at a time when you weren't using the TrackMan and the Hawkeye and all these other cameras that you have now, so you're basing it on data from afar. So it's hard for me to take that seriously. But Darryl deserves to be retired. If anything, he deserves it more than a Jerry Kuzman. He might deserve it more than Keith Hernandez. Because Keith and Cotter were the heart and soul of, well, the veteran leadership of that team. But the engine and the elite performance was Doc and Darryl. And we talked about Doc a couple of months ago. Darryl got a little bit better weather day. And look, I see this. I saw some comments on X. When it's all said and done, I think we're heading to the point, with the exception of Darling Hernandez being in the booth and them being on air every night. And that'll be the case for a while longer. But that's coming to an end, at least I believe on the Hernandez side. I don't know how much longer he's going to do this. 86 needs to be put in the closet, because I think there's a generation of fans under 30, passionate, that almost resent the 80s because it wasn't their time. They weren't around. It's irrelevant. We've talked about that. Similar to how 1969 was irrelevant to a guy like me when I was growing up watching the Mets in the late 80s. And that was only 20 years earlier. This is 40 years earlier. I don't know what they're going to do with Gary Carter. I think, you know, obviously Sandy Carter, his widow, has been at these events. And it's a shame that Gary can't be with us to enjoy, just like Hernandez, just like Darling, just like Doc, just like Straw and Mookie and El Cid and Jesse Orozco, you know, Santana, you know, the members of that team. You know, he can't be around to enjoy finally this organization honoring a group that has meant so much, that was the bedrock of me growing up as a Mets fan and has such an indelible stamp on the history of this organization. The best, most consistent period of winning we've seen. The late 90s Mets couldn't achieve it. The Omar Mets couldn't achieve it. The David Wright 2015 Collins group couldn't achieve it. Those guys did. And I think, and when we come back from the break, I think the message that Strawberry gave to the current group is important, because embracing what New York is all about and using it as fuel to be great, to be better, is not easy. You saw across the diamond a guy that was a former Met, Paul Sewald, who got, I guess fans gave him some choice words yesterday, said the quiet part out loud: I hated playing here. Yeah, we were bad. Yeah, I didn't get to see the good times, but I hated playing here and listening to those fans. And, you know, whether you lose 90 games, win 90 games, disappointment is disappointment. And you see it today. There's a bunch of distraught New York hockey fans, New York Rangers hockey fans, that want to blow up the Rangers after a great season. And I'm not a hockey fan, so I can't get deep into the weeds there about whether it was they were outclassed, out effort, a better team. But we're in a sports time where the fans are tough and demanding. The fans, even though they know deep down winning is hard and probabilistically the odds of coming away with disappointment are high. High 80s, high 90s, mid 90s, high in disappointment. They still want to make it seem like it's the other way around. And when they're disappointed, they're angry. They want to take out their frustrations on somebody, anybody. And it's usually the guys of the field, and it's usually verbally, or it's on Twitter, or it's on the talk radio airwaves. And sometimes it's in the parking lot or at the stadium. And sometimes it goes over the line. But in the end, these guys hear it. And, you know, you saw both ends of the stick on Saturday. You heard, you know, you saw the column from Sewald about the player that does not want to hear this, that wants to play and be held accountable, perhaps, and wants to perform, but quite honestly doesn't want to hear the antics from the fans, especially as it gets, you know, hotter and louder and it tightens around the neck. And then you see a guy that went through the mill, off the field, self-inflicted, on the field, had fights with his manager, had fights with the team captain in Hernandez. You know, the papers went after him, the talk radio airwaves went after him. Whatever it was, Darryl embraced it. And good, bad, or indifferent, whether you believe he maximized his potential or not, whether you think he deserves his number to be retired or not, Darryl was a great Met. Greater than you realize, just look at the numbers. And both sides, both the Mets and Strawberry, were not the same after he left. And in a lot of ways, the Mets have not recovered from losing Strawberry. They've patched it. Piazza patched it. And Wright tried to be the next guy. And the big, you know, five aces tried to do their thing. But when Strawberry left the building, that offseason of 1990, a big part of the Mets died. Of the Mets that would have been, I mean, there is no doubt in my mind, looking at how those guys performed, Mitchell and Dykstra and Strawberry. There was an ounce of patience by the front office. And if you read Davey Johnson's book, he was not, I mean, he wasn't for the Viola trade. He wasn't for the Dykstra trade. I mean, that's revisionist history. You know, he wanted to keep those guys together. And, you know, the minute Strawberry left that building, things were never the same. And they tried with Bonilla, and they tried to do it with Speed with Vince Coleman, and then they tried to do it with Generation K and Piazza and Wright and Reyes and Harvey and Wheeler and DeGrom, but they've never quite gotten it. Now you're faced with a situation where they don't have a Strawberry from the positional player side, and they got some real exciting arms. You've seen Christian Scott. You're seeing things with Brandon Sproat, Dom Hamill, Tyler Stewart, Jonah Tong, I mean, Nolan McClain. I mean, there's some names starting to be talked about. We don't even know if there'll be Harvey, Wheeler, Syndergaard, Mats. We have no idea. DeGrom. We have no idea yet, but they're exciting. But you don't have a Strawberry. You don't have somebody like Strawberry, the number one pick in the nation, compared to Ted Williams, you know, looked at as a savior and the hope, and somebody who, from his upbringing, from his maturity level, from all the things that he had on his plate, by all rights, it was way too much to ask, but he embraced it. And he made mistakes off the field, and he made mistakes on the field, but he embraced it. So who's that next player? Did anybody in that dugout, and that's what I'll get to after the break, listen to Strawberry yesterday, listen to his message, and say to themselves, hey, he's right, let's embrace this. Let's go out and make the negativity and the yoke energy to push us to the next level. So finding Strawberry is not going to be easy. Finding the next Strawberry is not going to be easy. Taking the attitude that Strawberry put out there and the message that Strawberry put out there is even harder. So we're going to take a quick break. When I come back, the message that Daryl Strawberry had to the 2024 Mets and beyond is an important message. And it's one that David Stearns and Steve Cohen need to have, whether they talk to a Juan Soto this offseason, draft the next great offensive player in the draft, or whatever they plan to do with the Mets after this year. They need to make sure that the players they bring in have the same mindset and mentality and understand. They should put that on loop, that message from Strawberry. So we'll talk about that and more right after this.